Hello, everybody. Today is March 17th, 2019. How's everybody doing out there? This is Voices from the Dark, as you probably know. And it's episode 36. I got another installation. I always say installation. I mean installment. Installment of the artist series. It's artist series number 24. And yeah, I have an artist here with me. Surprise, surprise. Do you want headphones?
I'll go for some headphones. Yeah.
Do we have headphones?
Only because it makes me feel cool then.
Yeah.
Even though no one can see me right now.
Any headphones available in the house? Headphones? No? Okay, we could do it without
it's not a problem, for a minute.
Yeah. Usually there's headphones, just like right there. Yeah, Ned, what's up?
I'll go some down there. Yeah, it's really good to be here.
Oh, looking at
the building is really, really cool. The first thing you see when you walk in is this really cool light installation art piece, which is really interesting.
Okay. Yeah, I agree. This is Glogau Air. Most people know that we've been doing the show from here for a few weeks now. Almost dropped my beer. That would have been a horrifying catastrophe. So, Ned, thanks for being here, man.
I really
appreciate it. Tell me about yourself. You're a musician or a writer?
Yes. So, I've been playing music for most of my life, and I've always loved words, and I only recently actually started writing fiction as a sort of a way to take the edge off purely writing songs, I think. And also because I obviously want to say a lot more words than you can say in like a line of lyrics. Only a paragraph will do of that.
Okay, and so you're Ned Mortimer, is that right?
That is pronounced perfectly.
Yeah. Wow.
Although
it's
I'm
a native English speaker.
I like the idea of an Italian pronunciation of my name, but I think it's from French actually, but because I have French family as well, but it's very English now.
What's the Italian pronunciation?
Mortimeri. I don't know. Ah. That's terrible. Everyone's judging me now.
They're all
laughing at me here.
You're definitely going to be judged here for that. So why are you saying it's Italian? I'm confused.
Oh, I was just referring to the fact that I've met some very lovely Italian people tonight. And I wanted to show off with my accent and it backfired.
Okay. All right, I get it. So it's not actually pronounced that.
No, it's
Mortimer.
It's Mortimer. You nailed it the first time.
Perfect. All right. So, just tell me more about, where are you from? What are you doing here? Where are we? We're in Berlin. I think most people know that who are listening. But
Sometimes I forget which city I'm in. But no, it is Berlin. So I grew up in the south of England, actually, kind of in the countryside.
Mm-hmm.
And around the age of 13, so I'd been doing a lot of quite a lot of classical music and sort of choirs, singing in choirs, playing violin and stuff. And my sister basically encouraged me to pick up a guitar, and I'm surprised it took me that much persuading, but she basically showed me a bunch of Jimi Hendrix chord books and said, you really need to try and learn this stuff, which actually for somebody who's never played the instrument before is really unfair. But I did pretty quickly get hooked.
Are you saying because the chord book was Jimi Hendrix chord book and it was complicated?
It's not really beginner level, right? Entry level guitar.
Okay.
Yeah. But then from that point on, I've just been in love with songwriting and, kind of obviously gone through lots of different genres of music. And I had a metal phase as a teenager, obviously, which
very
I'm
good.
And I'm still in that phase. I've gone through periods of listening to a lot more classical music. I used to be really into my pop punk, obviously. Hmm. All of the things like Radiohead and Muse were my favorite bands when I was a teenager. And more recently, because of the bands that I play in, I've been really into the indie folk scene. So the likes of Bon Iver and Kings of Convenience, people like that. So a nice mix.
Okay. And so you said South London. You're from...
No,
so South England.
South England.
South England,
yeah.
Sorry about
that. Although even being very far away from London, I still refer to myself as a Londoner because I lived there for a few years.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. I don't think you're alone in that. So what are you doing in Berlin? So you're a musician. Did you come here for music or?
Yeah. I kind of wanted to get out of London for a bit just to explore another city. And I actually came here with my girlfriend, who's a really, really talented painter. And she, being Latvian, suggested Berlin partly because it has a really, really strong arts scene and it's great for music and opportunities. And there's a lot of writers here as well, which is something else I now do. But also, I think, because it's equidistant between London and Latvia, where she's from. So it's great to also be able to still see our families.
Okay. Yeah. And how do you find... So you were a musician in London for how long?
I was probably there for about 5-6 years, on and off.
And and the rest of England was... you were also working or...
No, so actually I mainly started becoming really active when I went to university. And that's where I met Vedantha, who's the other half of the band that I play in, so August and After. And he's also a singer guitarist, and he's a brilliant songwriter. And it was one of those weird chance meetings where I could so easily have not, we could so easily have just not been interested in like playing with each other, like jamming or anything like that. But we sort of, against both of our instincts, decided we'd like give each other a try. And from that point on, we've just been creating music nonstop. And yeah, it's been incredible. So we played lots and lots of gigs at university and then moved to London to sort of take advantage of the huge scene there. And that's where we really started seeing a step up in terms of our live show, audience. Yep. And yeah, we've been really lucky.
And so did you say where you went to school, where you went to university?
No. So we met we met in Cambridge. Okay. That's where we were. He was doing a philosophy degree, so basically just playing chess all the time. Hmm. And I was doing law, and I've now moved away from the law as a career to pursue music. And
completely?
Yeah, not entirely. I do a little bit of startup work on the side as well, mainly to keep my parents happy. Okay. You see a theme running through this. But yeah, so we were kind of doing other things, but spending like a huge amount of our time on the music.
Okay. And so you mentioned that you became serious about music in university, but maybe if you go back a little bit earlier, like where now you said your sister got you into this, you know, into the guitar. It was your sister, right?
Yeah. I have two older sisters, and one of them, they're both lovely. One of them is a little bit pushier than the other one.
Okay.
So she's also the one that got me into Harry Potter, for which I'm also eternally grateful.
Really? Oh, wow. Yeah. It wasn't just like the... culture at large that got you into it?
No, she actually... I
she was the one that handed you the book.
She actually read me the first chapter and she said, I'll read you the first chapter, and if you don't want to read it, fair enough, I'll let you off. And she read it, and I wasn't blown away, to be honest. I probably wasn't listening. And then she said, okay, but there is a... She said, fine, you don't have to read it, but there's a sport later on that's basically football on broomsticks, and that literally just changed my mind. And
I actually know what that is. It's Quidditch.
There you go, yeah.
Wow, look at me. I'm like a Harry Potter fan. But not really. So before that, you also mentioned that you did classical music. So when did that start?
I was kind of when I was really young. I was learning the like piano and violin. Like my parents just kind of like wanted all of us to try music. Basically, they wanted.
But it wasn't for any particular reason. It was just because it's like a good thing.
Yeah. It was kind of. I think they just thought we should be doing some form of music, each of us. And I was playing violin for a long time, and I guess that it provided a really good foundation for the guitar, and then the piano as well, which I still play. But I think I just fell in love with the I don't know, I didn't like how constrained classical music was in its presentation. And especially at the time, I probably was being a bit anarchist about the whole thing. So I wanted to rebel against my parents. It sounds all very cliche, I know. That's why when my sister came along and, you know, tempted me over to the dark side of the guitar, I was hooked.
Okay. Mm. So when was it that you... Now, you said you became serious about it in university, but when was the first time that you felt that you had to do this? So it's like, you didn't just... You know, wake up one day at Cambridge and say, oh, yeah, I should do this and this is going to be my career and forget about law.
Yeah. I think from almost the very beginning of learning guitar, and I don't know if other people have had this as well, but there was never a point that I just wanted to learn other people's music. Mm. And that sounds very disrespectful. I'm, I, I, I there was a part of me that thought I could write anything. But I listened to a lot of music and I learned a lot of music. But right from the beginning, I was also trying to write. And yeah, I think like so many people, especially in Berlin, which has such a strong creative scene, it was just this feeling that I had to be creating my own work. Mm. And I hadn't realized at the time how important writing as well, so the words element of it, was to me. But it was, yeah, it was the combination of just, you know, I really appreciated music, but I guess I didn't really understand how it fit together, and I really needed to learn that, how that worked. And combining that with this kind of love of writing, I was just hooked on songwriting from probably the age of about 14.
Okay, so yeah. Lyrics and music together.
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah. Very controversially.
All right, so now that you're more serious about it, and you've had this, history with music and producing your own work, your own songs. What role does the audience or your perceived audience or your the imaginary audience, the person who are you writing for, basically? Mm. Like what are you thinking? Like, who are you thinking about when you're writing?
Yeah, I almost think like the older I've got, the more I've actually been writing for other people and less for myself. So I think when I first started, I was completely the only person that I cared about in terms of the quality or the reception. You know, if I thought something was good, it was good, and I think that that's fine for a bit because you get to explore your kind of creative boundaries and all this. But actually, there was just no quality control, and it probably took me until I got to university to start writing anything that was not terrible.
Okay.
And that's
honest. I like that.
Yeah, I probably wrote inverted commas like 200 songs between the ages of 14 and 18, and it was only when I got to university and I was accountable to someone else in the band that I really, really stepped up. I think, especially the lyric writing as well, just really understanding what was cliche, where I was trying too hard to sound like the lyrics were clever or not. That's when I really sort of, I think, saw a step change in that.
Okay. Yeah. So I definitely want to ask you more about and hear more about, you know, this transition that you're sort of going through right now from songwriting to larger works, written works. But first, you mentioned a lot of people. You mentioned your family, friends, schoolmates. So what role do they play in your sort of art, in your craft? You know, you've moved from, you know, south of England to London. I guess Cambridge is not in London, so it's to Cambridge and then later to London, and now you're in Berlin. So, like, how do you deal with the different communities that you come across? Mm-hmm. Like, have you been developing a community? Tell me more about that.
Yeah, I think, and this also goes for Vedantha, and I'll keep saying Vedantha, and he's the other guy in the band.
Right.
I talk about him without remembering that people might not know that
it's fine.
A name.
You mentioned him
I've
once.
Mentioned
I think
him.
It's
people have got him.
Hopefully,
so I think it's true of him as well. But we've kind of been really lucky. So like we've just been around people who are very encouraging. So we've never had a moment where we've felt like everyone hates our music or anything like that. But we've also had people there who are very, very discerning, and that there are a lot of people in Cambridge who are just but to be really honest, a lot better at music than I am. And just having people there to kind of, you know, guide you on whether it's the quality of the lyrics. I was going out with a girl who was an English literature student, and she was really good at telling me really specifically what she thought could be improved about my lyrics. And
was she into poetry or?
She read a lot of Sylvia Plath and Dickens and stuff. And I mean,
Sylvia Plath
is a poet, yeah. But I was actually thinking Virginia Woolf. I don't know why I said Sylvia Plath. She also loved Sylvia Plath. But
who doesn't love Sylvia Plath?
There you go. Yeah. So she was very influential in that sense. Like she was the one who really sat me down and explained where my lyrics were kind of not working. So that really helped. But we just had a lot of people along the way. So especially in Cambridge, and then when we moved to London, there were, I guess, more people to help us on the business aspect of being musicians. So, you know, where we were probably presenting ourselves the wrong way as well. So I think everywhere we've gone, we've we've sort of accidentally surrounded ourselves with these people who are very, very encouraging, but, you know, constructive. Yeah.
Okay. And do you do anything particular to kind of cultivate these communities? Or like you said, it's just by accident? Or
I think it's by accident, but I think one thing that we have in common, Vananthra and I, is we both genuinely take an interest in other people. Mm. And I think as soon as you start really trying to understand how somebody else feels, and even if that's about your music, which sounds very, very self-centered, but if that's what people are interested in talking about, it's their perspective on it. You start picking up a lot more useful information, like criticism, if you will, and that's really helpful. I think if I was giving advice to anyone starting out, it's really important to like listen to all criticism, not necessarily take all criticism, but not just ignore most of it because you don't like the sound of it. And I think that's something that Vedant and I both had in common. We were actually hungry for people to trash our work if that's what it took, because it was the only way we would improve.
Okay, good. Yeah, I like that. I relate to that. Okay, so I guess then tell me more about this transition that you would like to, or that you've started. You know, what kind of spurred it on? What do you hope to get out of it? You know, going from songwriting to what you call fiction.
Yeah. So I guess, and I imagine a lot of people can relate to this with the music, is you'll hear a song that you really like, and that will just inspire you because you want to do the same thing. You aspire to create something that moves someone else in the same way that that's moved you. And I've had that for years and years with music. You know, I was listening to Radiohead throughout my teenage years and just being blown away by some of the stuff that I was hearing, you know, melodically, some of the kind of chord patterns they were using. And I've kind of had that with writing now as well. The transition has really come because I've loved reading for my whole life as well. And more and more I'm reading novels and just being blown away, but then also starting to think like, okay, I couldn't write that. It's really, really hard work to just write a novel anyway, but it's a really, really refreshing challenge because you're not against anyone apart from yourself. You're the only barrier to writing something genuinely meaningful. And in a world where, you know, everything, especially the music industry, but even all other kind of industries, there are so many barriers, there's so much competition. It's not something I'm doing because I want to make any money. I'm not expecting to be like a successful novelist. But if I can write a novel that I think is coherent and good quality from start to finish, then I would just feel really proud of that as an achievement. And it doesn't have to be published. Mm. It doesn't have to be read by that many people. But it's like a sort of a challenge. It's like my treat to myself as a challenge. Mm. So I guess that's where the transitions come from. I don't know where I really want to see myself, because if I thought I was getting good at writing, then maybe I would want to make a career out of it. But it's just very early days, and there are just so many incredible writers. And being in Berlin, you meet so many amazing artists. And I've been to writing workshops and heard people speak and read out their work, and just thought, wow, there's already a lot of good stuff here. So the scene doesn't need another whatever type of fiction I write, writer. Or maybe it does.
We'll see. Yeah, I think that type of sort of self-reflection is important, but I don't think you should limit yourself to... I usually... Have a good night, man. I usually don't give too many of my own commentary on this type of thing, but I actually do relate a lot to what you're saying, because I started writing as a musician. Mm. I started writing terrible heavy metal songs. Because I
There's
was
no such thing.
Because I was amazed by Metallica.
Oh yeah.
And yeah, then from these short, you know, sort of non-poetic, trashy lyrics, I went from there to poetry, to short stories, to novel writing, screenplay writing, and so I think that what you're doing is quite natural, actually. And yeah, I think that the scene, you know, doesn't need or does it not need any, it's not like scene needs anything. How long have you been in Berlin? I don't think we talked about that.
Since the beginning of February, so quite recent.
Okay, yep. And you've already found Voices from the Dark.
I know, yeah.
How did you find the... How did you... I mean, you contacted me over Facebook. I know that. I'm the one you contacted. But I was just wondering.
Yeah, I think
this is for my own selfish purposes.
No. It's great. I was kind of going through some of the writers' groups. Mm. I think it was writers' groups.
Yeah, there's a couple that I posted.
Yeah, and I think you just posted it. And I had a listen. I can't remember the name of...
Was it the last one?
I think it was a recent one. I think it was...
The last one I published was Marko Ivić, and the one before that was Tao Tao, and the one before that...
It was the one before that, I think.
Blake, was it possibly? Blake Worrell?
Maybe.
I'm probably forgetting someone. That's really messed up, but...
No, but anyway, so it's... Yeah, I just had a listen. Thought it was really good. I thought you were very good at asking questions. I was going to say interviewing, but that's I don't know what to call it.
Yeah, it's interviewing. It's conversation.
Yeah, interrogating.
Yeah, interrogating. Yeah. Exactly.
No, so I just got in touch and yeah.
Cool.
Thank you for having me on.
No, of course. No, thank you for being here. Yeah. So in a little bit, maybe you can share with us some of your. Do you have any tracks prepared or?
I've got tracks on Spotify.
Okay.
Yeah. If that's possible, or YouTube or whatever.
I am not.
I've got my phone as well.
Okay. Yeah, I think the phone would be better.
My phone may or may not run out of battery.
The only thing is that I have to get the attention of the Italians.
I can.
Yeah. This is embarrassing.
I can try my Italian. Scusi. Do you? Is that right?
Yeah, that's perfect. That was perfect. Scusi. He said scusi. He was practicing.
I was practicing my Italian. Yeah. Do you have an aux cable to... Yeah,
yeah, sorry. I should have mentioned that. That's completely my fault.
No, it's cool.
I'm supposed to prepare that.
Grazie.
Perfect. And yeah, you just want to raise that volume up. Probably in 5 minutes we'll do that.
That's cool.
Yeah, so tell me what made you select Berlin to be, you know, your next... Or whatever, your... current step in your life?
I think between me and Anya, who's the, I think, aforementioned girlfriend, who's a really, really good painter, we just wanted somewhere that had a really, really strong creative industry.
Well, when you say aforementioned, you mean that we spoke about it before the show?
I couldn't remember if it was before the mics, yeah.
I usually try to not talk too much to my guests before we go live because of that exact reason. But yeah, just go back a little bit before.
Yeah, I was fine. So I moved here with my girlfriend, who's she paints watercolors and other styles as well. And she and I were both quite keen to just live somewhere other than London, especially me, because I've only ever lived in the UK. I've traveled a fair bit, and I've spent a lot of time in France because I have a French family kind of on my mother's side. But I've never lived abroad, so. And she was quite keen to spend some time away from London and explore a different art scene. And we just settled on Berlin because it has such a strong reputation for just being an amazing place to live and also having huge amounts of opportunities.
Yeah, for the arts.
Yes, yeah.
So, all right. I guess that's pretty clear. I guess there's not too many other reasons why someone would move to Berlin.
Actually, there is one. There is one other very selfish reason.
No offense to Berlin. I love you.
So I did German A level, and I.
Oh, you studied German?
Yes.
Before or after you got here?
Before. So okay. This was 10 years ago or something.
Oh.
And I learned it, and then I haven't been back to Germany since I was 16 until now, and just forgotten most of it. And I just thought, what a waste. So this was also an opportunity to learn German again.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. That makes sense. Yeah. It's a multicultural experience.
Even though everyone speaks English.
Yeah. I mean, it gets in the way of learning in Berlin for sure. Yeah.
And also, I walked into a flower shop today to buy some flowers. Oh. Oh, what a charmer. No. that's really... I didn't just want to drop that in for that. But I wanted to speak to the woman in German to practice my German, and she was like, how about French? For some reason... Oh, no, my German wasn't good enough for her German, but her English wasn't good enough for my English, so we ended up speaking in French, which was very weird, but really nice, actually.
It happens.
Yeah. It's a great city. So many wonderful people.
Yeah. How do you feel about location? Do you think that location is important for an artist? Oh, and actually, do you consider yourself an artist? Or how do you feel about yourself? Mm. This is a question I try to...
That's a really good point, actually, because it's only recently that I've tried to ignore where your money comes from as your like identity. And I think different people will have completely different opinions about this. I know some people who identify themselves with the thing that they find most interesting in life, which I think is wonderful. I think that's the best way. Other people will identify themselves by their work, which is absolutely fine, especially if that is the thing that they love the most in the world, which it often is. But I feel most natural and purposeful as a songwriter and a writer in a broader sense. So I do see myself as an artist in that broader sense. Even though I've studied law, I've worked in business for a long time. It's fun, but it's not my passion in the same way that music and writing is.
Mm. Yeah. Okay, and so how do you feel about location? Do you think, in your experience or in your you're going to want to raise that to the max volume when it's ready? How do you feel about the location and you know where you are in terms of like creating your work? Do you think that it has, in your experience?
Yeah, I think it's a huge factor. I think a really big part of it is just getting yourself out of your comfort zone regularly. And that doesn't mean you have to live somewhere else. It can also be you just travel and it inspires you, or you read different things, or you listen to different music. But it does often come with a place. And I have felt more creative energy being in Berlin. I'm sure it would be the same in other places as well. But also, it just depends. I think it also depends on meeting a lot of other people. If you're the kind of person who gets inspired easily by talking to other people, then, yeah, as long as you're in a city where it's easy to meet lots of people, that's fine.
Okay, so it's important to get out, basically.
Yep.
But it's not something that's, say, required.
No. I think everyone has their own way, and I don't think you should ever draw like really broad conclusions that apply to everyone, but most of the time, if you are doing the same stuff over and over again, you are just going to run out of ideas and creative energy, and it's not going to be fresh, and that's going to come across in your work. So whether it is where you're living or what you're consuming as like art, you need a varied diet, I guess. Like that's really important. So that's why I think when people do move, it really gives them like that spark.
Okay. So do you want to set up that track and
see I'll play something.
We can figure out how to get that to play here.
I will play a song. Oh yeah. I'll play a song called The Vancouver Waves, which was on our debut EP. So if people like the song, you can find August and After on Spotify or YouTube or the internet generally. This song is nothing to do with Vancouver. It's just I like the sound of the place and I've never been there. The name of the place, yeah. Nice. Should I hit play?
Yeah, just hit play.
The calmest wave that I've ever known. You are the calmest wave. When you stop coming into shore, nobody knows, but I'll be on my way. My mood moves like a stray tide that I've ever known. A storm that curves inside of me. And if you ever vanish off the map,
you are the
nobody
way.
Knows, but I'll be on my way.
Hibernate till I'm can wait another year. Hibernate till I'm okay again. The tidal waves can't follow me in.
So I came here
tragedies. The sun sets better than a painting. It calms my eyes with ease. But it's the saddest sky that I've ever seen. Till I'm on form again. One way to another year. Hibernate till I'm awake again. Tidal waves come follow me here. You are the calmest way that I've ever known. You are the calmest way. When you stopped coming in to shore, nobody knows, but I was on my way.
All right. So that was Vancouver Waves, right?
Yeah.
That was beautiful. And so tell us more. Maybe you can tell us about like how you came up with that song. I don't know. This is I've rarely ever asked this to. I mean, I've only had a couple of musicians on the show actually. I want to have more musicians because of this. Because it's
we are the best type of artist.
Well, not
so biased.
Well, yeah. For me, it's more like it's the best type of artist for podcasting.
Yeah, it's quite useful. You get some music.
Well, no, I mean it's all related to sound. There's also sound artists and sound designers and people who work in film.
It's all
related to sound as well. But I've actually never asked anybody like about the specific track. I mean, I probably did. There was a guy who came on and we played a couple of his tracks and I probably asked him some specific questions, but I never asked, how did you come up? So maybe you can tell me, like, how did you come up with this?
Yeah. So I think sometimes I'll think really hard about what a song should be about. And then other times I'll just be jamming on the guitar and I'll sing a random phrase and the whole song will grow out from that. And It almost depends on whether the title comes first or the title comes at the end. So for this one, I was singing it and I just wanted to write a song about like, I guess like escapism and getting away from like something awful happening and just needing to like run away to the corner of the earth. And the song kind of grew out from that. And there's obviously like, you know, ocean imagery and stuff, which is quite common in our music anyway. And then after that, I was like, okay, I'd really like to call this something waves. And I literally was looking at a map and thinking and Vancouver Waves just has like a really nice ring to it. So it's like one of those songs that sort of did actually write itself. And this is the thing that really frustrates me. And this is true for all artists. And I think people who don't create things don't necessarily get this. And this applies to things like the creative advertising industry, all these things as well, is you have to do hours and hours and hours of nonsense to find like the good stuff. And so like I'll be sitting trying to write and that will literally be just jamming on the guitar for like, you know, it could be like 3 hours, and then there'll be like a 10 second moment where I'll play something that's just it's not even me, it's just like my hands are just playing it, and I'll think like, why couldn't I have just come up with that? Like that would have saved me so much time, and that's the song. It's really interesting.
I really like what you just said there about the hours and hours of nonsense. Can you say more about that? Like, and you also mentioned that non-creative people or people who aren't in creative positions or however you phrased it wouldn't necessarily understand it. Can you maybe explain that more? I think that's important.
No, so it's... I'm pretty sure I'm stealing this off a book that I read. So it's not... It's obviously not my theory about this, but I think it's the Accidental Creative by Todd Henry. And basically he talks about if you're at work and your job involves coming up with ideas for things. So a classic example of this is the advertising exec who has to create slogans or whatever it is. And you put in your diary 2 hours of staring out of the window thinking. That time is invaluable. If you want to come up with ideas, you need to just completely clear your schedule and not be doing anything, so that you have space for these ideas to breed. But if somebody looks at your calendar and it says, I'm going to be staring out of the window for 2 hours, they're just going to put a meeting in because they'll think, well, that's not actually that's movable. It's you know, not necessary. But
it's
actually
not work.
It's actually the most important part of your day if your job is creative. And I sometimes forget that as somebody who's trying to balance, you know, this stuff with, you know, other sort of businessy stuff that I've done, or am doing. It's really hard to like plan that time in because you just don't feel like you feel like you shouldn't need it, or that it is like a bit like frivolous, but it is so important. Mm. You have to just be willing to commit a lot of time to mucking around to come up with those like few gems of ideas that then turn into songs or stories or paintings or whatever it is. Mm. And that's what I think. Yeah, if you don't do it, you might not realize that's important.
Mm. So what can people who don't have these kind of jobs or positions, what can they take away from that? Like, I feel like there's some kind of advice in there.
So if I was being really broad, and making like a sweeping observation to apply this in today's society, I think because it's so easy to be on your phone now and be scrolling through an app, and it might be Instagram or Facebook, it might be BBC Sport, which it often is for me, because I'm a big cricket fan as well. So,
okay.
I know some people who are really good at this, but I'm not brilliant myself. It's just the ability to not do anything and just literally sit and stare out of a window. I know actually Vedantha does this. Like he'll have a Eurostar, and I'll be like, on my trip, I'll be like trying to cram in. So I should explain. We record our stuff in Paris, and we'll take the train over to like, because it's more environmentally friendly, to record our stuff when we've gone from London. So when it's just a bit random to mention Eurostar. It sounds like I'm sponsored by them or something.
No, maybe you are. That's fine. Maybe, if you are, just let me know.
Yeah, brilliant.
Maybe I can get some
sponsors. But yeah, So I'll be sitting there, or he'll say, oh, how was your trip? And I'll be like, yeah, I was working on a story. I sorted out some emails. I listened to a cricket podcast, whatever it is. And I'll be like, but what about you? And he's like, yeah, I just spent the whole trip just staring out the window. And I'll be like, okay, fair enough. And he's like, it's so good for him. And it's possibly because he was a philosophy student. He's mm-hmm. one of the most like kind of calm people I know, and so he is the calmest wave, actually, taken from the song. sorry, that's terrible. Okay.
Is it like, true though? Is he the calmest wave?
He's not
the room.
He's not. No, he
so
probably
that wasn't
wants to
inspired
think,
by him.
No. Maybe unconsciously it was actually. Mm. But he's really good at just understanding that he needs to like give his mind like space to breathe. And as something I think all of us can, well, most of us can do a lot better, is not feeling like we have to be doing something or distracting ourselves at any one moment.
So the advice is to not always be distracted, not always be receiving input and being, what's the word they always talk about? There's a phrase that they use when I have a son, and they always talk about stimulation. You don't always have to be stimulated. Mm. You can just do nothing.
Yeah, well, think about it like exercise. Like you're meant to have rest days, so you know you're pumping those irons or whatever it is, and then as you can tell, I don't do that. otherwise, I wouldn't use that word. But then you have your rest days for your muscles to actually like build. And again, really tenuous science there. Sorry, everybody. But I think it's the same. It's like you're kind of feeding your creative mind. So you're reading a lot of books or watching a lot of films or listening to a lot of music or going to art exhibitions, but you also need time for your mind to kind of consume, to like digest all of that stuff. And that's where it will kind of come out with ideas. And recently, I'm going to pretend that I do it on purpose, even though it's just me being really disorganized. It's great when my phone runs out of battery because I won't be tempted to listen to something or be looking at some website or whatever. I'll just be sitting or walking wherever it is I'm going. Even when I was walking here, my battery was very low, so I was just thinking, and it was really nice just to walk through Berlin, just thinking.
Yeah, no, I definitely agree with that. I feel that. All right, so I think we got a pretty good sense of what you do and what you're doing, and yeah, And thanks for the track. It was nice to listen to.
No,
and I'll definitely, you know, put whatever websites and SoundCloud, Spotify, whatever whatever you got. Usually I put like one or two links in these episode show notes or whatever you want to call them. But yeah, so I guess why do you do this, man? Like, what's the purpose for you? Like, why? What gets you up in the morning? What makes you, instead of doing something else, or you know, yeah, why? Just why?
Tell me why. It's a really good question. I was talking to a friend about this recently. I really just have this kind of. So I've recently boiled down. I'm gonna take your time. So, stepping back massively from this, I was recently given this linked on YouTube to like this really really long. It's like a 3-hour video of like a workshop that this guy is giving in America. He was a very famous like mediator for the last like 3 decades called Marshall Rosenberg. Don't know if you heard of him. So he came up with this concept called nonviolent communication, and it's becoming more and more popular now. And he unfortunately passed away a few years ago, which is really sad. But his whole premise is like people are basically only ever saying two things when they communicate with each other, which is please and thank you. And the majority of that is please, but it's all dressed in a lot of other stuff.
It's basically a requests or
yeah exactly
or. What's the opposite of a request?
Well, you're either making
a confirmation of a request.
Or a confirmation that somebody has fulfilled a request.
Right, right.
That they may not even know that you'd made.
Requests and fulfillment.
That's kind of like that, basically. So, and there's a whole load of stuff. I mean, I'd honestly recommend just looking up nonviolent communication on YouTube to everybody, because it's incredible. But the reason I bring it up is because it made me boil down my own. So you're basically just expressing a need whenever you communicate. You're saying, I need this, and you can fulfill this by doing X, and therefore make me feel Y, whatever. Mm. And that's a really profound insight anyway, because it means that when people are arguing, they're actually just saying, I need something, and can you give it to me? And it's really great. But I recently sat down and kind of like thought about all the different things that I might say when I'm angry, or that I might think, or just anything that felt like a negative thought that I have frequently. And I turned that into a list of like needs that were like, what do I actually need? And it's really broad things, like the need to be loved, the need to feel, so the really big one, and the reason I brought it up, is the need to feel relevant. So this, I think, for me, answers your question. Is like, why do I do this? Why do I write stuff? Why do I need to write songs and play them to people at gigs and put them on the internet? And I think for me, it's because I have this burning need to like be relevant to the people around me and have like some kind of impact. I don't know if that's like the same as needing to like leave something after I've gone, or like, you know, it sounds like very... what's the word, like attention seeking, like I want people to be aware of me, but it's more like I want to look back on my life and feel like I created something that...
Or like approval seeking.
It's, yeah, something it can be. And this is the thing, I was talking to a friend recently and she was really drilling into this. She was like, why does it matter that people that you don't know have heard your music? And I sort of said, well, it just feels like if a lot of people are hearing the music, then it must be affecting some of them in a significant way, whether happy, sad, whatever emotions it's causing, it's making them feel something. That's great. And she was like, does that really matter to you though? And I think to an extent it shouldn't, you know, I should just be, you know, trying to make people immediately around me or make the world a better place, but it doesn't necessarily have to be through like creating art that then touches people. But I think for me, that's what it just does give me the purpose in life. It's that creating something that affects other people. And yeah, it was always going to be music and words, because I'm a terrible painter and drawer. I can't draw anything. And so if I know there are loads of other things you can do to be creative, but so I'm just kind of like, you know, pigeonholing everything into that. But you know, I think it was the music was the thing I really gravitated towards straight away, and the writing as well. And yeah, it's only recently that I've really understood how central it is to my identity.
Mm. Yeah, being relevant to the people around you.
Yeah, and that translating into words and music.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay. So this is the way that you can fulfill that need.
Yep.
Okay.
Yep.
I really like that. I feel like it's and I've said this before many times, that this series on Voices from the Dark, this artist series, is sort of like a therapy session for me. So I not only do I want to be around artists and hear what they have to say about how they live and how, well, what I believe is that their methods of like living can actually help other people. Mm. It also gives me, you know, something to think about week after week, and I really do think of it as like a therapy session. And what you just said obviously sounds very sort of, you know, psychotherapy sort of style. I mean, and it does come from this, what was the name again?
The book. Oh, no, yeah. The Marshall Rosenberg. Yeah. So yeah, he's...
it's like self-help, sort of.
Yeah. It's so he calls it non-violent communication, which I don't think explains it very well, but it's just a good label for it anyway. Right. Yeah.
And I think that this idea of making a list is like something your therapist might say.
Possibly, yeah. I do lots of weird lists and spreadsheets and stuff, but I self-medicate that stuff. But I think even like just writing a list of things that you're aware like bother you in the back of your head, just so you've got it laid out in front of you.
That's great.
That kind of thing, yeah.
I actually might do that.
You should try it,
honestly.
Yeah.
And I think that it's also good advice, which is, you know, one of the main things about this show. I don't know if, I mean, you've heard some of the episodes, but it's really the main idea of the show is to, you know, get like some insight into artists' lives and try to, you know, reapply it or rework it for, like, you know, well, not just non-artists, but, you know, for everyone. And so, yeah, I think I'll definitely try to make some lists about what I need.
Lists are great.
Yeah. So we talked about it, I think, a little bit before the show. Maybe you mentioned it a little bit during the show. You definitely mentioned something about not needing to identify yourself or label yourself by how you make money, which is, you know, sort of going into this final question, which is, you know, how do you live as an artist? Mm-hmm. You know, some artists, you know, do strange, weird jobs. I've had my share of crazy jobs. Mm. Some people are running their own companies, you know, like some guests recently told me they're like doing some really amazing things, you know, completely unrelated to the arts.
Mm.
And some others are making all their, you know, living off of you know, their work. So, like, what about you?
So I've done different types, actually, at different times. And I don't think there's one right way of doing it for anyone. But like, yeah, I had a full-time job for 3 years in London. And I still had the energy to do lots of music on the side. But there were lots of other things I wasn't doing that I think I'd wanted to do as well.
What were you doing? What was the full-time job?
So I was working, I was running the kind of operations and supply chain for a popcorn brand in the UK. It was a really, really cool company, actually.
What's the name of the... Well,
it's called Propercorn.
Oh.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. It was like a really fast-growing snack brand. So I joined it as about like the 18th person in the business.
Propercorn.
But yeah.
It has nothing to do with Conor McGregor, does it?
It has nothing to do with Conor McGregor. unless he's now endorsing them and I've missed it.
No, he has a proper... 12, it's a crappy Irish whiskey, calls it proper 12, so I just, so now I see, maybe it's like a sort of British English, Irish English thing, just throw a proper in front of it,
yeah.
And that's your marketing.
It's a very popular word now in naming brands and
okay.
stuff, yeah.
Oh, okay.
But so I did that for 3 years, and it was great, and I learned so much about just business and how we could even manage the band and stuff from that. More recently, I've been doing a lot of function gigs, so I've been doing more music, but it's kind of like, you know, doing like people's weddings and stuff in another band, and that's really good fun as well. I think almost like somewhere in between would be great, where like I'm actually trying to make money off the music and make it self-sufficient, but also in the meantime, you know, keeping the business mind going with other work, just to kind of keep money ticking over. But I don't think there's any right way of doing it, and I haven't hit upon the perfect formula yet, to be honest.
And so what's the weirdest job you ever had?
Oh.
Whether it was while you were a musician or not.
That's a really good question. I actually did 2.5 weeks in an advertising company, which was quite fun. I mean, it wasn't particularly weird, but I, before going well, in, I thought this sounds like the dream job, and I came out.
If it's
out
anything like
it's not
Mad
my
Men,
job.
Then
yeah, exactly.
It's definitely weird.
It wasn't quite like Mad Men, but yeah. I wish I could pull off a suit that well, but it was yeah. No, that was quite interesting. I'm trying to think what else. It wasn't weird, but like I think one of the most kind of key jobs I've had in my life was I did like 7 summers in a row where I was working for a children's like summer camp, mm-hmm. And actually that was around the same time I was like really getting into the guitar and the songs and all this stuff, and teaching kids guitar as well. Mm. And yeah, I mean looking back, it was quite weird how much we all loved doing it. Like we really, really enjoyed that job, like all of the staff, because it was like having like a holiday where you were just like having fun all the time and mm. being paid for it, because like you know you were playing football as well and playing guitar as well as like mm. a whole bunch of kids that you were teaching guitar or football or whatever. But yeah, so that was cool. Yeah.
Okay, and so coming to Berlin, do you feel like any of this has changed? Any of this method of you know, balancing financial survival sort of techniques mm. versus artistic?
I don't think it's changed because of Berlin. I just think, like, I'm slowly getting there to, like, work out the right balance for me. And this is what I'd say for anyone, actually, like, who's trying to, like, be an artist and carve out as much time for it, is that it will take time to like find your perfect formula, and there's nothing wrong with doing other jobs if it's a part-time job that's teaching you something else, especially if it's teaching you something different. That's amazing. But I don't think it's been Berlin so much as just generally I've been on this like learning curve where I'm realizing that I don't mind doing other things, but I want them to like complement my general like I'm very enthused about like creativity and how the creative mind works, and I want my work to like relate to that, if that makes sense.
Hmm. Yeah, so you...
That's what I'm starting to discover.
Right, so, I mean, earlier you said that you have not found the perfect balance yet.
Yep.
So this is what you're also referring to now, is that...
Exactly, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And do you think that it's possible to find the perfect balance?
Yeah, I think a lot of people do, you know. I think it's really good to ask yourself all the time, like, what would my dream job look like? And there's nothing wrong with... you know, painting really, really unrealistic kind of dreams for yourself. But also you can be very, very tactical and strategic about how you get there. And I've been thinking about this recently. This is like almost me thinking aloud as a career advisor to myself.
Okay.
But like I find this stuff fascinating, but I do not have the like knowledge backing to be like an expert in the field of like creative psychology. I just
right.
do not. So it might be that I have to study or work in something that teaches me some of that, so that I've got a bit, you know, I've got a little bit more legitimacy and credibility to then, you know, build that side of the career. And I think that's really healthy. You don't have to jump straight into your dream job as a, you know, as a session guitarist or as a, you know, somebody as a travel writer, whatever it is, you can kind of build in steps towards that and create like a more rounded, I move my hands a lot around, and people can't actually see what I'm doing, so I don't know why I'm doing that. You can make a more rounded career for yourself by doing that. Yeah. Don't know if that answers the question.
Yeah, I mean, it was sort of a general question anyway. Is there any parting advice that you would like to give to anyone who's listening and who might download this, you know, 100 years from now or tomorrow?
Yeah. Okay, so I'm saying this assuming that I know what I'm talking about this stuff. So
right,
please.
But I wanted to. You just reminded me. I don't think that you need to have like a degree.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
All this stuff to yeah. So it's my question is about your experience.
Yeah,
it's
yeah.
not about expertise or anything like that.
Yeah,
so.
I'll launch straight into it. When people show me their music and ask me what I think about it, and they genuinely want my opinion, 9 times out of 10. If I'm not enthused by it, it's because I think that they're kind of like what they're consuming, what they're listening to is too narrow. And so I talked earlier about like loving loads of different genres of music. And I think it's so important to just take yourself out of your comfort zone and what you're used to. Because it is what they say about comedians, you know, like as soon as you've like made it and you're like, you know, it's limousines and like, and like whatever else comedians do. I don't want to give any cocaine, bad idea. Yeah, I didn't want to be like cocaine, but yes, exactly. That's what they'll start talking about in their stand-up because that's all they can, you know, now think about. Maybe that's a bit unfair, but I do think that if you're listening to one genre of music, then obviously you're good. And I'd say 9 times out of 10, if I hear something and I'm just not really enthused by it, that's the problem, because I do love a lot of different types of music, and I love something completely like crazy that has a different take on music. So I'd say if you're like creating music now, that would be my advice. Like, really think about what you're listening to and try and listen to something completely left field, and it will take you in a cool direction.
Mm. Okay, I think that's a good advice. So basically, branch out.
Yep. Yeah. Yeah.
Go beyond your go out of your comfort zone. Like you had said earlier about another topic.
Yeah.
And I think that applies to, you know, artists, and whether they're musicians or and just people who are not artists as well. So that's good advice. Yeah, just go out of your comfort zone and
move to Berlin.
Move to Berlin.
Yeah. Yeah. Come to Berlin.
Well, don't. Not everybody. Eh? Yeah. Some of you people got to stay away. I think that's definitely true. Yeah. It's already overpopulated, I think. At least in North Carolina over here, it's like crazy. So Ned, thank you so much for being here. I really appreciate it. Is there any current, or do you have any shows coming up in Berlin or anywhere else? Or
not yet. No. We're planning our first single launch party of the year, because we've got like 4 songs to release this year, but okay. We're still working out the logistics, me and Vedantha. So watch this space. But I would say if you want to listen to some music, please go onto Spotify or YouTube or whatever. Type in August and After. And we would love to hear from you as well. I love hearing from people about what they think.
August and After is the name of the band.
Yes.
And Ned Mortimer is the man, or one of the men. This has been Voices from the Dark. Thanks again, Ned, for being here, and for Glogau Air for hosting us, and RBL Berlin for being, you know, for transmitting us into the ethereal atmosphere of, I guess, mostly Northern Italy. Nice. Thank you, everybody. Have a good night.